welcome to this 54th episode of So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio in the heart of Paris. My name is Stéphane de Vries.
And my name is Sarah Bertelsson. And this week, butchers are under fire here in France, some of them literally even. They ask for police protection because what they fear are vegan attacks.
And Holocaust survivor, former minister and the great European Simone Weil, who passed away last year, will get her final resting place amidst France's national heroes.
And Emmanuel Macron went to the Vatican this week.
French police uncovered another terrorist plot, but this time one of the suspects is a former police officer. But first, the topic has been dominating European headlines and scaring European politicians for almost 3 weeks now, and it's all about the question, what do we do with the migrants and refugees trying to get into Europe? There's a big rift in Europe. On the one hand, there are the more reasonable countries like France, the Benelux, Scandinavia, who do a lot to accept refugees. And then on the other hand, there is the Eastern European countries. They don't want to have anything to do with them. And in the middle, Italy, with the new government.
Well, maybe not even in the middle, maybe at the front line, I would say. You have
absolutely
Italy, yeah, you have sure. Greece, we have Spain, which are the countries that take in most of the refugees that now arrive in, or migrants that arrive in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And Macron is trying to take a central role in this debate. He tries to bring Italy and Spain and all the other countries together, but everyone defends its national self-interest, so it's very hard to find a compromise. There was a big European summit in Brussels, and after a very long night of negotiations, they reached an agreement at 6 a.m. On Friday morning. They agreed to set up closed migrant centers in EU states to process asylum claims. And, well, although the details are unclear, it seems like a very complicated and maybe even an unrealistic deal.
Looking like a very, very complicated summit to bring these very, very different ideas.
Absolutely. And then there's also the difficulty of Angela Merkel. She's in big trouble. Of course, Germany was the country that took in most refugees because Angela Merkel a couple of years ago said, we can do this. It led to the rise of the extreme right party, the AfD. And now Merkel's own position is really, really under pressure. She may even risk losing her job as the German chancellor. So Macron is doing everything he can to save Merkel, because without Angela Merkel, he knows that it will be very hard to find other allies for his reform plans.
Merkel even said that the future of Europe hangs in the ballot the question of migrants.
Yeah.
Will define the future of Europe.
I think that's a bit dramatic, but it's true. It's interesting to see how passionate the debate is. And what's more surprising, actually, is that the debate is based on false premises, because actually much fewer refugees coming to Europe now than like 2-3 years ago. So the refugee wave has been stopped. And, you know, since the new Italian government is there since 3-4 weeks, everybody's talking only about this. But the fact is that there are no more refugees coming to Europe. Of course, we've seen this boat, the Aquarius, which made the headlines every day in all the European media. But there were only 600 people on board. So there's a huge gap between reality and perception.
I think there are several things you can say about. It's true that the numbers have gone down. But the fact is also that those who arrived during that big wave in 2015, you can see there may be their impact on the societies. It's becoming more and more clear now, a couple of years later. But then I also heard a very interesting argument today by a researcher who said that, you know, this debate about migration today, what it's actually about is the fact that Europe for centuries has been dominating the world and influencing the rest of the world. While Europe and the world is going through a big change where the European influence is actually on some kind of
downfall,
more or less. And so this is a identity crisis.
It is.
For Europe and for the Europeans. And the migration crisis that we are talking about is actually a false debate, because what this whole crisis is actually about is about the European identity and all that. And I found it quite interesting to see it that way, because it's true that we have seen the nationalist parties and even racism and xenophobia and all of that. It has been going up in Europe over decades. It didn't start with the big crisis, with the big wave of migrants in 2015. It started far before that.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, of course, interesting and also a bit hypocritical that the European countries were big emigrant countries.
Of course.
Many waves from Germany, Italy, Spain, Sweden, you name it. A lot of countries, they had a huge number of emigrants going mainly to the US, but also to other parts of the world. So now it's the other way around, and now suddenly it becomes a problem. And I think it's true, it has to do with identity, but even more so, I think a lot of people in Europe, they have no self-confidence. Of course, it has been a very tough decade with the economical crisis, high unemployment, a lot of young people who struggle to find a job, especially in the south of Europe. So they don't have any self-confidence anymore. So it is a mix of looking for an identity, the world that is changing for some people too quickly. You know, it's a reaction to a lot of people don't know what their place is in the modern world. And of course, when you see people coming from abroad, you consider it a threat. You think they bring instability, crime, etc., etc. But the reality is quite different. But unfortunately, in those debates, it's the emotion that you know makes the difference, and the perception. It was interesting to see the tweet by Donald Trump. He said, since the migration wave, crime rate went up in Germany. And actually, the crime rate in Germany is now the lowest point since almost 25 years.
Yeah. Once again, fact-checking is...
Yeah, very important. But unfortunately, it looks like in debates nowadays, the rational argument cannot win anymore from the emotional argument. Nevertheless, this is a big deal, and I think we will talk about this topic again in the next couple of months, because it's not going away.
Now, some things apparently seem to change, at least a little bit, because we can always say that France moves very, very slowly forward. But this week, French MPs voted to remove the word race from the constitution and to ban gender discrimination. And this is a part of rewriting France's 60-year-old constitution.
Yes, it's pretty interesting, because in the first article of the constitution, there is the phrase that everybody is equal before the law, all citizens, regardless of origin, race, or religion. Now, that sounds very reasonable, because you don't want to have any discrimination. But actually, if you put in the word race, then you acknowledge the fact that race
exists.
And so after a heavy debate, it's actually already a proposition by François Hollande, the former president, during his campaign in 2012. He already promised to ban the word, but it took quite a while to get as far as we are now. So the word race is going to be banned. The parliamentary commission agreed upon it. Now the law still has to be voted in parliament, but it looks like that is it will go ahead.
And so there will be a change. It will no longer be race, but it will be instead gender.
Yes.
So according to the constitution, the new constitution, if eventually it is voted through, it will read that all citizens are equal regardless of gender, origin, or religion.
Yeah, and if you're really very radical, you could even argue that gender has no place either, because then you acknowledge that there is a gender, that there are genders, but you know, but it will be in the new constitution. So theoretically, this country will become a little bit more equal. And interestingly enough, the word race is going to disappear, but something else will also be introduced into the constitution, and that's
the environment.
Yes, interestingly enough, France will probably be the first country in Europe to introduce the word environment in its constitution. So it will be become constitutional to protect the planet. I don't know if the planet is really happy with that or does it may not make any differences. Nevertheless, it's in the constitution. So a modernization, a facelift of France's constitution this week. Race is out and gender and the environment are in. Now, Macron has been traveling a lot the last couple of months, from China to America, all over the world. But he hadn't been to Europe's smallest country, the Vatican.
No, but he did this week, didn't he? He went to see the Pope himself at the Vatican. A quite interesting visit. Quite a lot of media on it here in France, especially religion and politics being two very, very sensitive issues here. The secular state is almost religion in France. But at the same time, France is a very, very religious country.
Where absolutely.
Many, yeah. A large population of Catholics, of course. Macron being one of them, Emmanuel Macron being one of them. He is now considering himself an agnostic, if I remember correctly. But still, it was a very important meeting because Macron's relationship to the church has been under very intense scrutiny here in France. It created some fuss when he earlier this year, in front of the bishops in France, said that the link between the state and the church had been broken and that it needed to be fixed.
And that's, of course,
and that is something that you cannot say without being questioned about it here in France, where, you know, as I mentioned, the state is supposed to be secular, and its relationship to the different religions, especially the Catholic Church, is very questioned. So he had to respond to a lot of criticism regarding that.
How did it go, the visit?
It went really well. And it went so well that he actually got to spend more time with the Pope than any other world leader.
Wow.
Twice the time as Donald Trump, which maybe you're not that surprised, because Donald Trump and the Pope, we can sort of understand that they're maybe not on the best of terms. But even more time, a couple of minutes more than Barack Obama.
Wow. So how long did he stay?
57 minutes.
Wow.
I think that's about 4 minutes more than a background. But they did apparently talk about, of course, the migration crisis, Europe, and they exchanged gifts, which is kind of interesting, because the gift that the Pope gave to Emmanuel Macron is a bronze medal of Saint Martin. It's a 4th century a symbol of generosity. And the Pope actually made a point out of you need to help the poor. And this, well, we know this. Emmanuel Macron has been sort of accused of being the president of the rich here in France.
That's a subtle hint. It's nice.
I don't know how well. Do you think that the Pope follows French media?
Yeah, I think so. They always call France the oldest daughter of the church. So there's a special relationship between France and the Vatican.
True.
Not always a good one, but I think, yeah, he probably, well, at least his advisors will probably, you know, briefed him on Macron's politics.
On the debates in France. Yeah, well, so apparently he told Macron as well that it is the vocation of all those in government to protect the poorest, because we are all poor.
So we are all poor, but this coming in a week that Macron actually came under fire because he ordered new plates for the Élysée Palace, 900 dinner plates and 300 side plates for a total of 50,000 euros. And also he decided to build a new swimming pool in his residency, the holiday residency in the south of France. So I don't know if the Pope...
Well, we are all poor, but we all have to eat and bath.
And swim, of course. Yes, of course. But I think the Pope made a point and tried to make something very clear to Emmanuel Macron. So it was a nice trip.
I think so.
Let's pray that it was.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Now, we've been talking a lot about terrorist attacks the last 3 years in the existence of So French. Now, we have talked very often of... We've talked very often on So French about terrorism and usually about Islamist-related terrorism. This week, the police unveiled another plot for terrorist attacks, but this time they charged 10 people and they were from the far right. They were far right extremists, and among them also a former police officer, a former member of the gendarmerie. Now, what's this story, Sarah?
Well, apparently this group, it's called Operational Forces Action, not a very known terrorist group here in France, but they are, this group has links to this terrorist organization or whatever you can call it. It urges French people to combat Muslims, or what they call the enemy within. And these people, according to then the police, had plans to hit Muslim targets. In Paris, they had quite a lot of arms that they found in their apartments, thousands of rounds, and even some kind of instructions to create explosives. The actual how this terror attack was going to actually be executed is not really clear. It's an ill-defined terrorist plot. But still, it shows that it reminds us, I must say, that terrorism is absolutely not only a question about Islamist terrorism, and that the Muslim inhabitants of this country are also target, very much a target, must say. And it's also a fact that the number of attacks against Muslims in the country has gone up over the last years.
Yeah, and the suspects included a retired police officer who was the alleged leader of the group, but also a former soldier. So it shows that even in the ranks of the state services, there are, you could call them radical elements.
I'm just wondering how this would have been reported if it had been Islamist terrorism we were talking about. Would the way that media had reported about this and how the government would have had acted, would it have been different if it would have been then Islamist terrorist elements within police force, for example?
Yeah, I think so, because actually the French media did not really talk about terrorist attacks or terrorists. They talked about extremists planning attacks on Muslims. So it shows how sensitive the use of the word terrorist is. But of course, it's always, you know, if it's a Muslim, it's a terrorist. If it's a Christian, it's usually a deranged person,
yes,
something
exactly.
like that.
In this case, at least the police were talking about a terrorist.
Yeah.
And the investigators were talking about a terrorist attack.
But the media were very reluctant to use the word terrorist.
Yes, and even it's interesting also to see, because we have been reporting over the last years about a lot of these kind of plots that have been unveiled by the authorities. And quite often the proofs that they are actually providing the public with are quite bad, I must say. So I remember one case recently where some guys had been keeping instructions for some kind of creating a bomb or something on their computer. It's not a plot that has gone very far in its, you know, preparations. But in this case, it's actually, I mean, we have real arms, we have rounds, we have almost explosives, and clearly a motive.
Yeah, and on their website of this shadowy Operational Forces Action, you can see an apocalyptic battle scene under the Eiffel Tower. They claim to prepare the French citizen soldiers for the combat on national territory. And these are images you can also find on sites of ISIS, for instance. So
yes, and we shouldn't forget that anti-Muslim violence has gone up in France. Last year was 72 violent acts reported to police, and that's up from 67 in 2016. Now, to another kind of terrorism and terror threatening France, apparently. Stefan, you've heard about this, I'm
pretty sure. Yes, and it's also, at the same time, our regular food item. it's actually another kind of terror threat. It's the invasion of the body snatchers. Well, at least according to some of its butchers, they are afraid of vegans.
Yes.
There have been some incidents the last couple of weeks.
There has been incidents. Some butcher shops in the north of France has been vandalized by what is said to be militant extremist vegans. Apparently some fake blood has been poured on some of these shops, and windows have been smashed, etc. So this led to a very serious letter from the butchers' union, so butchers' organization, to the interior minister himself.
Yeah, and the butchers, they sharpen their knives and they ask for protection because they're afraid that it will escalate, that the vegans, as they call them, is not sure who's really behind this, because nobody's got arrested so far. But the butchers are really afraid of the vegans, and they are especially afraid that the violence will escalate and that there will be victims. Now, there was also an intellectual battle, of course. This is France, after all, people defending vegans, and also people, vegans themselves, who say, well, this is actually very bad publicity for us.
It is interesting because it comes in, you know, being a vegetarian myself, the thing is that vegetarianism is not very big in France.
No.
Probably, I mean, among with Spain and Italy, I would say some of the countries in Europe with the lowest numbers of vegans and vegetarians. So it's less than, I think, 2% of the population that consider themselves vegetarian, not even vegan. Vegan, well, I don't think we don't even have numbers on that. But it's a very, very infected question. And what you can really feel is this fear within the meat industry for this growing monster of vegetarianism.
Yeah, because it will cost them, you know, meat consumption is going down. And
It is that it goes down. I would say not only because of vegetarians and vegans, but because of flexitarians, which is what it's called, where people actually start thinking about, for environmental reasons, their meat consumption. So a lot of people say that, well, trying to eat less meat, maybe only a couple of times a week, for example. But of course, this is a threat to an industry. And we can see a very, very heated debate here in France between the adamant defenders of the meat culture and then, you know, those saying that, you know, we should maybe try to cut down a little bit on the meat consumption. And there has been discussions about putting in place a non-meat day in the school canteens. And this has also been very, very opposed by some forces, and especially then the meat industry here in France.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with identity. I mean, in France, you eat. That's one of the main reasons to live. And usually you eat meat as well.
Yes.
Almost all.
Absolutely,
meals.
It's part of the national identity.
Yeah, and if you go to a restaurant in France and you want to have a vegetarian dish, they will give you a salad, although it is changing.
It is changing, and I mean, I can tell from my own experience that when I moved to France almost 15 years ago, it was more or less impossible to get a proper vegetarian dish unless you went to an Italian restaurant. That's completely different today. In almost all restaurants, you will have a vegetarian suggestion. People are aware that if you say you're vegetarian, that doesn't mean that you eat poultry, for example. Things that, you know, it was just this big ignorance some years ago. So things are changing, and more people do become vegetarian, but not at all. If you compare it with the northern European countries, for example, where vegetarianism really has, you know, been impregnated in the societies. France is not quite there yet, and I think there's a quite long way to go.
Now, this weekend it's going to be sunny and warm in Paris, and these are the perfect conditions for the annual Paris Pride, the Marché des Fiertés LGBT, the big, big festival in Paris. And it actually started a little bit already this week.
Yes, the neighborhood around the Marais, especially, which is the LGBT neighborhood here in France, has been painted in rainbow flags over the last week already. Flags in the streets and flags on the streets.
Yes, indeed. Pedestrian crossings were painted in the rainbow colors. It all looked very happy. It was very nice. But not everybody liked the colorful pedestrian crossings. And
no, and they were earlier this week, then some of these rainbow flags were actually vandalized by people, and there was a tagging of gay people should not have the right to be in Paris. It was quite a nasty night that they went through. But this is a classical story of what comes around goes around, we probably could say.
Absolutely, because everybody was shocked by the fact that there were slogans on the street against homosexuals and LGBT people. But then actually the Paris Town Hall, they said, you can have your cake, but we will eat it, because from now on, the pedestrian crossings in the Marais will be permanently in the rainbow colors. So that's actually a very nice gesture of the city's mayor. From now on, they will be permanent. So if you go out in the Marais, you will cross the streets and go to all the wonderful bars and restaurants there, walking on rainbow flags. Now that wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed it. Please follow us on Twitter at So French News. And if you have any questions or suggestions, please send us an email. Our address is sofrench@sofrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or in the TuneIn radio application, and to share the podcast with your friends. You can also listen to all our previous podcasts in iTunes.
And if you like French music, check out our playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. Just search for So French Podcast or click the link on our website.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks, and all summer we will have special editions for you with a lot of wonderful guests. We're kicking off on 14 juillet, the 14th of July, and France's national holiday, with writer Stephen Clark.
And we hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening. Au revoir.